This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. An evil ruler is coming who will oppose God's kingdom with everything in his power. Evil rulers of past generations have all been reflections of the final evil king. God does not want his people to be surprised at the evil rulers that arise in earthly kingdoms. So, he's given us a warning in the book of Daniel. Today, Pastor Sam will conclude a sermon from Daniel chapter 7, titled, Thy Kingdom Come. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
You could put other names here. You could put Nero in the first century. You could put Hitler. You could put Stalin. These are just prototypes of the ultimate man of lawlessness that we are reading about here in Daniel chapter 7. And so there is this arrogant despot who controls the kings of the earth. But ultimately, all of this is not outside the control of the sovereign God of heaven. I mean, if you go back and read these verses carefully, you'll see that these nations are described as ravenous beasts, but things are being done to them. For example, look, if you will, at verse 4. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. Then as I looked at its wings, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand. Somebody is doing that. Somebody is acting on this great lion. And then if you go to the next beast and you see the bear, somebody is telling the bear what to do. It was told, arise and devour much flesh. And then if you look at verse 6, the leopard, something was given to the leopard. Something was done to the first beast. Something was told to the second beast, and something was given to the third kingdom. Dominion and power and authority. Who is the one doing all of this? Who's the one lifting up the first beast, commanding the second beast, and giving dominion to the third beast? And we find him in verse 9. There is someone in another realm who sits on a throne that is much higher and much greater, and he is doing and saying and giving and controlling everything that happens on earth. You remember the main lesson that God wanted King Nebuchadnezzar to know? King Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to be under my heavy hand of judgment until you know something. And here's what you need to know, that the God of heaven rules the kingdom of men. Remember how we noted our propensity as people, and really it's the propensity of all the nations, to be content at times to let God rule in heaven. We're happy for God to be the God of heaven. We're happy for God to have charge of the angels and all of the things that go on in heaven, as long as he doesn't rule on earth. As long as he doesn't come and mess with my kingdom. And that was Nebuchadnezzar's point. Nebuchadnezzar was happy to include God in the gods of Babylon. He was happy for Daniel to worship. He was happy for Daniel's three friends, unless they refused to worship in ways that he wanted them to worship in chapter 3. And all along the way, God is bringing Nebuchadnezzar to this realization. He's saying to Nebuchadnezzar, you need to know that while you may rule over this little kingdom of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar's like, little? It's the greatest kingdom on earth. It's this great tree, and everybody on earth is under its branches, and I've conquered the earth. And God says, I rule that kingdom. And Nebuchadnezzar had to humble himself. And at the end of his life, when he became a follower of Daniel's God, he actually articulated that in a declaration he sent out through the entire earth. There is a higher throne. And the one sitting on that throne is actually controlling everything that happens. He He determines the kingdom's duration. He evaluates its morality. He passes judgment on those kingdoms. When you look at verses 9 through 10, you see someone sitting on a throne, and out of that throne comes fiery flames and a river of fire. And thousands of people, thousands and thousands, literally millions, a myriad of angelic beings are standing before him in worship. But there is a court that is convened. Why do you convene a court? And the answer is to pass a sentence, to make a determination and to pass a sentence. And what you're going to find out about this court that is happening in heaven is that as the evidence is evaluated by this court, a sentence is passed first against the kingdom, this fourth kingdom, but really the kingdoms of the earth. So there is a sentence passed against the kingdom of the earth, and then there is a sentence that is passed, or a decision that is made for the people of the king. A decision is made about this little arrogant horn, and then there is a decision made at the end of the chapter for the people of the king. In other words, what Daniel saw in this heavenly vision is that no matter how mighty these kings on earth are, no matter how many they are, no matter how majestic they are, or how insurmountable they appear to be, there is a throne in heaven, and the decisions of that throne are the decisions that matter. And that throne makes decisions about the kingdoms of the world, and that throne makes decisions about you and about me. And so, why do we need that kind of a decision? Well, look at verses 7 and 8. There is an arrogant invective that comes. The word invective means decretory or deprecatory speech. And so there is this one kingdom that is singled out. It appears as this mighty dragon. It is terrible. You can see the description in verse 7. It is terrifying. It is dreadful. It is exceedingly strong. It has great teeth. It devours. It breaks to pieces. It stamps what is left with its feet. So here's my question. Who is this beast stamping? Who is this beast devouring? Who is it destroying? And there are two answers to that. Answer number one, this beast is destroying the other kingdoms. We're going to read later about the ten horns. This king, this horn is going to come up, and it's going to tear out three of the horns. It's going to destroy three kingdoms. And the other kingdoms are going to be so terrified that their kings are going to come to him and say, here's all our power. Here's all our authority. Here's all our resources. Here's all our military, because there's nobody on the planet that can do war against you. And so this kingdom that we're reading about here that is terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong exercises its strength and its wrath against the other kingdoms. But there's another target for all of this. You can see the target in verse 25. This king, when he's in full strength, he will speak words against the Most High, and he will wear out the saints of the Most High. When we get done with this vision, Daniel is terrified, and he's terrified because he just got a vision about what's going to happen to the people of God who live in the kingdoms of the world. And if you and I get nothing else out of a vision like this, here's what we need to take away. The kingdoms of this world are not friendly to us. We may live in a season of peace. We may live in a season like Daniel lived, where Cyrus the Great issued a declaration and let God's people go back. We may have a temporary moment like that, but the kingdoms of the world are being energized by a God of the world who hates God and who hates his people. And one of the things that I think we see throughout Scripture is the temptation that God's people have to constantly run over to those kingdoms and to become a part of those kingdoms and to enjoy those kingdoms. This is what Paul talks about when he instructs us, and what John talks about when he instructs us not to love the world nor the things that are in the world. Why? Because all of those things are designed and are being used by a God with a small g who has been given temporary authority over the world, and his goal is to wear you out. That phrase, wear out, means to destroy, to trample. It's a very, very fierce phrase. And so here's Daniel, and he's looking at this vision, and he sees into the future far beyond his own day and age, and he sees that all along the way there are kingdoms that rise, and they have power for a while, and they are fierce, and they are deadly, and then an even fiercer kingdom comes, and it tumbles down the former kingdom and absorbs it into its midst, and then it has a season, and then another kingdom comes, and then a final kingdom comes, and it has iterations that go all the way to the end of the age, and all of them are hostile. All of them are led by men who are arrogant, blasphemous rulers like Belshazzar. But none of them are going to escape the judgment of God. And that's the next thing that you see. That's the fourth thing you see in the text. That's in verses 9 through 12. There is a divine corrective to all of this. There's a kingdom perspective. There's a sovereign initiative. There is this invective that we saw, this arrogant invective, and now there is this divine corrective. So what is God going to do about all this? I mean, the God who made promises to Israel, the God who made promises to you, the God who made promises to me, what's he going to do about all this? I mean, this is his world. This is his earth. These are the kingdoms that he allowed to come into being. What is he going to do about all the mess that is going on in the world, particularly when that mess is led by people who stand against everything that he represents? And beyond that, they don't just stand against him, they stand against his Christ, and they rage against his people. They ruthlessly and relentlessly persecute his people. And there is a God in heaven who sees all of this. And so the question is, what's he going to do about it? And the answer is, he's going to correct it all. You see this throne appearing in heaven, and there is someone sitting on the throne. He appears in majestic sovereignty. As I look, thrones were placed, verse 9, and the Ancient of Days took a seat. He's been there forever. He exhibits unmarred purity. His clothing is white as snow, and the hair of his head like wool. His throne, a fiery flame, its wheels burning like fire. He's on a chariot. This throne is actually described to you as a war chariot. Whoever's on this throne is about to go to war. There's a war chariot here. He receives unending worship. Myriads serve him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stand before him. He sits in unassailable judgment. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. He knows everything that is needed to know in order to pass judgment on what he sees. And then he acts with unavoidable wrath. Look at verse 11. I looked because of the sound of the great words, the blasphemous words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. There's an amazing statement. If you want to see it actually happen, you need to go to Revelation 19. But notice, in the midst of all of this judgment and all of this wrath and all of this purity and all of this sovereignty, there is also unmerited mercy. There's unmerited mercy. As for the rest of their beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a half, or in a time. Which brings me to the final thing. Who does all this? I mean, we know the actors on the earth. We see these kingdoms. We see the kingdom of Babylon. We see the kingdom of Medo-Persia. We see the kingdom of Greece. And then we see the kingdom of Rome and all the kingdoms that go beyond. We know who's behind the rulers of those kingdoms. Daniel's been really clear about what those rulers are like and what they're up to and what we can expect from them. And then we've been given insight into who's behind all of them. There's a dragon behind all of them. It's not without incident that the fourth beast is dragon-like. There is a dragon behind all of this, and he has a champion that is coming. And when this champion comes, he is going to energize this champion so that he becomes the king over all of the earth. And in the meantime, while we wait for that champion, that satanic champion to come, there are iterations of him all along the way who do horrific things. And you step back and you're like, how did God let this go on? How could this happen? And what is God going to do about it? And the answer is God is sitting on his throne and he is passing judgment. And there is someone who is going to act on this judgment. And that's the final thing. There is a redemptive identity or initiative that is revealed here at the very end. Look at verse 13 and 14. Someone appears and is formally granted a royal audience before the throne and the one seated on it. And we read about this in verses 13 and 14. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. This is formal. There is a mammoth thing happening. We are about to get God's decision about what he's going to do to deal with everything that's been going on earth. There is this arrogant ruler that is coming who is the champion of the God of this world. Well, we're about to meet God's anointed, appointed champion, and he is being formally presented to him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should worship him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. So who is this person? Who is he? Well, in the Old Testament, you would know him as the Messiah, the anointed, appointed champion that has been promised. But you meet him in the New Testament, and you know his name. His name is what? Jesus. It's not a mistake, is it, that every time we turn around, Jesus is identifying himself as the Son of Man? I mean, there was a time when the disciples were walking with him and they were heading up to the north part of the kingdom and they're having a great debate, and Jesus turns around and he says to them, brothers, I have a question for you. I want to know something. And you can just see Peter perking up. He's about to shine here. And Jesus says, okay, here's what I want to know. I want to know who people think I am with regard to the Son of Man. Amen. In other words, what Jesus is asking is not, who do people think I am? He's actually asking a different question. With regard to the Son of Man, do people think I am him? And it's like Peter just wilts, and then he realizes he's got to talk. He's like, it's kind of like this. Some people, you know when you don't know what to say, some people think that you're Elijah. Some people think that you're a great teacher and a prophet. Some people think you're John the Baptist, come back with his head glued back on. But nobody is thinking about you as the Daniel 7 Son of Man. And Jesus turns to Peter and he says, well, what do you think? Plural, what do you think? And Peter says, instantly, we know. We know who you are. When Jesus was being tried, the high priest asked him if he was the Son of God. And Jesus looked at him and he said, you have said it. But from now on, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of the Father and coming in glory. So I want to suggest to you that what Daniel is seeing is something that happened at the end of Jesus' ministry. After his crucifixion and after his resurrection, we see Jesus going outside the city with his disciples, and he is ascended into heaven, and he is formally presented to the Father. And at that time, I think Jesus gets the dominion, the glory, and the kingdom. Now, he's not going to possess the kingdom until he comes back in glory. But I think what we're seeing here, I think what we're seeing here in Daniel 7 is that formal presentation of Jesus after the ascension when he goes to the Father and he is actually given kingdom and dominion and glory. Some people would say it's actually that time when he goes to the Father before his ascension. But there is a time after the resurrection when he is formally presented to the Ancient of Days and he receives a kingdom. He receives dominion. He receives glory. And that's why he comes in clouds. These are the Shekinah clouds of glory that always show up when God shows up. And in Revelation 1, when he returns, he is going to come back on those clouds. So we don't make a mistake and not connect him to this vision in Daniel 7. Who is this champion? And the answer is Jesus. And he has already defeated the enemy. And he is one day going to come and establish a kingdom. And here's what you need to know about that kingdom. That kingdom belongs to you. That's your kingdom. You may live in the kingdoms of this world. This is not your kingdom. You have a better kingdom with a higher throne, and the one sitting on that throne has promised you blessing upon blessing in that kingdom. And that's why, as we close this morning, you and I need to pray for the coming of that kingdom. You and I need to live by its values. You and I should advance its agenda. We should worship its king. We should share its invitation boldly. And we should bear its affliction joyfully. There's something odd, isn't it, when kingdom citizens of the kingdom of heaven find themselves suffering in the kingdom of earth and they suffer joyfully because they know there's a better kingdom coming? That's what's so transformative. That's why in the first century people said the blood of the martyr is like seed. It's like seed. When that blood waters the seed of the death of that martyr, Christendom grows. The kingdom expands. You and I have a great king who sits on a great throne, and he knows everything that's happening. You know, currently in our political climate, there are all kinds of debates happening, and everybody's wondering who's going to do what and what's going to go on and where's it all going, and there is a higher throne. And the person on that throne is not one bit concerned or one bit confused about what's about to happen. And he knows there is a day coming when the champion will return and establish a kingdom that will never be moved. And it will be your kingdom. And it will be my kingdom. So let's live for that kingdom now. Let's pray for its coming. Let's live by its values, let's advance its agenda, and let's worship its king joyfully.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. Today's speaker is Dr. Sam Horn. He's the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join one of our morning worship services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. every Sunday. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's message or about Palmetto Baptist Church, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billieu. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.